Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about, of course, various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal, whether it's ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, cryptozoology, out-of-body experiences, levitation, you name it. That's what we talk about, the weird and the unusual. Hope you enjoyed our show last week. We talked to, actually had two guests on at the same time, Nick Corey and Allie Turner, who are both paranormal investigators who are covering a wide variety of paranormal experiences, everything from ghosts and UFOs and the whole gamut. They formed a group called Jasper Haunts. Actually, Nick Corey founded it, and Allie Turner is the case historian, and together they're researching a number of very, very active hauntings and UFO cases in the Minnesota area. So very interesting guests. If you didn't get a chance to hear the show, remember all the shows are archived on the BBS website, so check it out if you get a chance. I think you'll find it very interesting. I know I certainly did. Now tonight, we're moving back to the title subject of the show, UFOs. UFOs are fascinating. There's so much going on in the field right now. There's a study group in Ukraine, which has just released all their files. So more and more, this is becoming an international phenomenon. Another bit of UFO news is Lonnie Zamora. He's the lead witness in the Socorro, New Mexico UFO landing in 1964, I believe it was, a very, very well-documented case, which left landing traces and, you know, a very, very credible case. Lonnie Zamora was a police officer, and he watched this craft land. He saw two beings, and this account made it into pretty much every major UFO book. Well, he just died recently, so I want to give him, you know, a prayer there for his safe passage to the other side, call it, I guess. So there's a lot going on. I think the UFO field is one of the most, it's very mercurial, it's very changeable, it's very delicate. I think it's got a potential for a lot to happen with it, with this government cover-up, and particularly with the Roswell UFO case. Now, we've talked about Roswell before. We had Jesse Marcel Jr. on the show, and other Roswell researchers as well. I think Roswell is probably the number one UFO case in the world. Certainly there's hundreds of witnesses to it. It's been researched by scores of witnesses. There are many, many books out about Roswell as well. So this is a case that has not, you know, died yet. It's not a dead horse. We're going to keep beating this thing until it is busted wide open. And our guest tonight has actually written a book that's partially about Roswell, and he will be talking some about that and some of the other amazing connections he's discovered with the UFO phenomena and other paranormal things. His name, is Aaron Kaplan, and he's written a book called Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion. And he's going to be talking with us tonight about some research that he's been doing. And he does have quite a history in this field and has been doing research for many years. He actually graduated from Tilden High School in Brooklyn, New York in 1964 and continued his education into the College of Aeronautics in New York, and was employed for over 35 years in the aerospace aircraft industry, doing civilian and military projects for all types of aircraft, actually, including designing major parts for jet engines and much more. So he's been employed by such companies as Fairfield Republic, Grumman Aircraft, Sikorsky Helicopters, and Boeing, and also did work for the EDO Corp involving submarines and electro-visual engineering with flight simulators. This is the 3D type. And So he is actually really uniquely qualified as a researcher to provide some answers and insights into what happened at Roswell and what's going on with the UFO phenomena in general. So I want you all to give a nice, big, warm welcome for our guest tonight, author of Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion, Aaron Kaplan. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Yes, thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, you've got quite a resume there. It's, you know, I'm really excited to have you on the show because, you know, you're obviously very well educated, and I'm excited to see what you have to say about, you know, not only Roswell, but UFOs in general, and your book. It's fantastic that you've been able to get that out.
Thank you. I do not have a PhD, however, I did some great research, and what you folks are going to hear tonight, you've never heard before. Something very astonishing. First of all, we have to be very careful of the word Roswell.
Okay.
Roswell can be a trap to the past, a trap to nowhere, which is exactly what the U.S. government wants us to do. Or can be a key to the future, a real key. When I say a trap to nowhere, because we've seen every time there's a major sighting somewhere, we've all seen TV, CNN News, Larry King Live, all the folks, the all same gang, sitting around in lounge chairs on the beach, end of New Mexico, having a shelter, waiting for UFO to land. Now guys, that's not going to happen. What I found out about Roswell is very astonishing. What I'm going to do now is do something that no author has ever done before. I've read many books. I listen to many videotapes, many shows on the radio, and I've never heard an author give a direct answer. What happened in Roswell? Why did it crash? There's always a maybe, perhaps, and so forth. But never an answer. So before I start my theory about Roswell, the proof that I've made, I'm going to give you two straight answers right off the bat.
All right.
It'll be in two parts. The first part, what was the cause of the crash at Roswell? The cause. The cause is DNA. That's the cause. The second half of the answer, why did a UFO or the saucer crash at Roswell and the vicinity? Now, let me say something. There was not one crash. There were between 7 and 9 crashes in the area of Roswell and the vicinity.
Right, right. I've heard that.
And Corona. The reason why it crashed near Roswell is nuclear fusion. So, folks, I gave you two straight answers that I cannot escape from. These are the answers in my book to the cause of the crash, is DNA, and why did it crash near Roswell, is nuclear fusion.
Well, I understand the nuclear part.
You have to explain why.
I understand the nuclear part because Roswell was a center of a lot of nuclear research at the time, but could you explain what you mean by DNA
and
that connection?
The DNA. Let me take it step by step.
All right.
Crash at Roswell occurred July 3rd, 1947. Now, what happened just a couple of weeks before the crash at Roswell? Many people cannot really connect the dots.
Oh, that's right.
We had a sighting and by a very famous private pilot called Kenneth Arnold. And that happened June 24th, 1947. Just about one week earlier. At around 3 p.m., he spotted 9 UFOs flying in formation right near Mount Rainier, Washington.
Right.
9 UFOs. I'm claiming that those 9 UFOs, and we'll explain to you why, are the same ones that crashed Roswell a week later, on July 3rd. Now, I'm going to ask the average person on the streets, what major occurrence happened before the Kenneth Arnold sighting on June 24, 1947? they wouldn't know. Let me tell you, the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, Nagasaki, stuff like that, but it's not the answer. If you ask somebody, did it ever hear of a naval operation called Operation High Jump, everybody will shake their head and go, High Jump, what?
What is High Jump?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What is High Jump then?
Operation High Jump originally was to be a very peaceful operation, naval operation, involving a few aircraft carriers and about very peaceful 40 to 50 warships heading to Antarctica. It was supposed to be a very, very scientific operation. However, the head of the operation, the most famous name that we know, is Admiral Byrd. There were more. Secretary of Navy James Forrestal was involved, Admiral Ramsey, Admiral Nimitz, Admiral Coulson, and so forth. But the most famous person that we know from that operation is Admiral Byrd.
Wow. Yeah,
something happened down there. Something happened that very few people know. There are stories. People even read what's called the Secret Diary of Admiral Byrd, which is supposed to be taking place at the North Pole. Admiral Byrd's secret diary did not take up place at the North Pole. No way. Because Admiral Byrd was in Antarctica aboard the aircraft carrier, the Philippine Sea, in charge of six aircraft called R-4Ds, that took off January 29th during Operation High Jump on the way to a little air base in Antarctica called Little America. He was the pilot of the first plane. The R-4D is the converted DC-3. So six of them tied to the top of the aircraft carrier, Philippine Sea, with chains. Six of them. Kerry also carried about 100 fighters,
right,
aircraft fighters. However, those aircraft fighters could not take off until those six aircraft, the R-4Ds, took off first.
Okay.
Admiral Byrd was seen by the whole Navy out there. There were over 4,000 personnel, Americans, Australians, English, and Russians. We have seen Admiral Byrd step into an R-4D on top of the aircraft carrier, Philippine Sea, on January 29th, and took off from the carrier toward the base, Little America 4. It's roughly a 700-800-mile trip by air. There were six aircraft involved. He piloted the first one. So he was seen by the whole Navy in Antarctica on January 29th, and a little earlier.
This was 1947?
Pardon me?
This was 1947 then?
It was January 29th, 1947. Absolutely
okay.
Correct.
All right.
Now, the most amazing thing is what happened when those six aircraft took off. Now, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. government, are trying their darnest to make believe that Operation High Jump never took place. Never, ever. The reason is, once you admit to what happened in Operation High Jump, which I'll tell you in a few minutes, then you have to admit to Kenneth Arnold so, then you have to admit, yes, that a UFO crash in Roswell is possible. So the U.S. Navy and U.S. government are trying their darnest to keep this under wraps, that Operation High Jump never, ever happened. And here's what happened, folks. That peaceful operation went to Antarctica. Now, don't laugh. You heard it before. But it's the truth. To hunt German Nazis who escaped from Germany with the aid, I repeat now, I was very careful to what I'm saying. It's very critical. With the aid of certain alien entities. It seemed that Germany signed a treaty in 1936 in the Black Forest in Germany between Germany and a group of aliens. Now, those aliens are not from the, you know, constellation, who knows what, Copper Draconi, or Palladians, or you name the planet.
Right.
They're not from Betas, Vega, they're not from the galaxy, spaghetti, meatballs, no probes. Let me tell you something. Many alien races come to this planet to visit. They never stay. They come, let's say they're going to a little picnic here, they take Polaroid pictures, and they leave. The reason is, they know who's in charge of this planet. They also know who formed this galaxy. I shouldn't say formed, I'm going to correct myself. I'm going to say terraformed.
Right.
Those folks are the race called the Anunnaki. One fellow called Zachariah Sitchin did a lot of research in this field. Thanks to his great knowledge in Sumerian language, he's right on. I checked all the records, different books and museums of records, and except for very minor discrepancies, I agree with him 100%. The Anunnaki terraformed this planet, and also one more planet in this galaxy, which I will not mention yet. They have terraformed the Earth. That's why the book of Genesis, the third chapter, you know, I can read, that first God created the heavens, the earth, the trees, the bird, the lizard, etc., then mankind. Folks, if you read the lines one by one, you get the exact steps of terraforming a planet.
Oh, interesting.
The exact steps. So the whole universe knows, they know. The Anunnaki race owns this galaxy. They own our planet. They own Mars. They wouldn't dare come to our planet and perform any alien abductions. They don't do that. We also all heard of the Nephilim. The Nephilim are the only Anunnaki race. Roughly 55,000 years ago, the Nephilim and the Fallen Ones, the members of the Anunnaki race, who fell to Earth, whether by choice or by force, the real answer is by force, and they're in prison here for the last 55,000 years. They are known throughout the whole universe as the Banished Ones. They cannot escape this planet. They are banished here.
So do they take human form?
They can take any form they want to. They are super shapeshifters. They can look like anything you wish. They can shapeshift on a dime.
So do they like?
However, 55,000 years ago, they did something. We all know, you know, we all heard the stories from many other books and authors that those aliens fell in love with the woman of Earth. They had sexual relations with them, and the offspring are known as the Gibborim, etc., etc., etc.
Right.
So the biggest sin, the sin that they did is of sexual relations, and because of that, the giants were born. They've done one more thing. Supposedly, they've created dinosaurs to live among mankind. And, of course, mankind cannot coexist together with dinosaurs. So the big gods at the time, with Enki or Enlil, whoever it was, got pretty mad and decided to imprison them here on this planet. Now, something happened 55,000 years ago, but I'm not going to get into that right now. That's not a story. I'm trying to stick to the DNA story of those Nephilim. Those Nephilim are in prison here. But the day they were in prison here, they changed their own structure of their own body's DNA in order to be compatible with the woman of Earth. They had huge laboratories here, humongous laboratories, supposedly on a continent known as Atlantis. It did exist. There was another continent by the name of Lemuria. Folks, listen very carefully. Lemuria did exist, but not on this planet. It existed on the planet Mars. But I'll explain it later on if we have time. Now, when those Nephilim had the huge laboratories, their UFO bases, all their, you know, machineries and power plants in Atlantis, they could do whatever they want. You have to realize, those Nephilim were DNA specialists. Their whole background, their whole purpose of existence in the universe is to form life. They were DNA experts. And their leader, name, I gotta be very careful here, it's not a devilish name or anything, it's just a name, it is Lucifer. It's simply a name of a super, super scientist. Many religious people take it to be the devil. It is not. Those Nephilim are part, and still are a part, of a universal consortium of 3 to 4 entities. And they are mentioned in the Old Testament. The cherubim, the ophelim, and the seraphim. That's mostly a religious term. But all they are is entities. They're called angelic entities in the Old Testament and the New Testament. But all they are is space entities from different dimensions, from the fifth and sixth dimension.
Right. Now, well, I think a lot of UFO researchers do agree that some of the events in the Bible are probably exactly what you're saying, depictions of extraterrestrial visitations rather than angelic events, or one and the same thing.
Right. Well, you know, go to churches and the synagogues, whatever. And I mean, I happen to be Jewish, and I'm a rabbi, you know. Angels called the Malachim, and angels, Abraham met the angels, and so forth. But folks, in religious terms, they're angels, that's great. But in scientific terms, all they are is entities from another dimension. That's all they are.
Right.
You guys remember that those Anunnakis have terraformed our Earth and no life on it. They also form life on another planet. But I'll get to it later on. Now, when those Nephilim fell to Earth, like I explained before, they reversed engineered their bodies to be able to exist here for a long time. They knew they would vanish here. But something happened roughly 13,500 years ago. The deluge. The flood. When a fellow named Noah was involved.
Right.
During that flood, certain things happened. Not only rough waters, but some galactic alignments, polar shifts, etc., etc., etc. Possibly also a nuclear war, possibly. But we're not sure of that. During that catastrophe, those Nephilim lost, I repeat, they lost, all their scientific laboratories, or at least most of them, they are now unable to reverse engineered themselves on their own to go back to their original shape and form. Because they're missing something. Now, here comes something very important. The way those aliens are being kept here in prison, everybody's wondering, gee, how come they can escape? They're Anunnaki is a very powerful people. Well, their superiors, the gods Enki and Enlil, are more powerful than they are. The way they're in prison here is they're placed on the moon. I said the moon, M-O-O-N.
Right, right.
Many people are wondering why the moon does not have its own orbit or its own movements. It just follows the Earth in a circle. Stationary. Dark side is always the dark side, the far side of the Earth. And the sunny side always faces us. And our astronauts went to the moon. They tried to drill holes in the moon with super drill bits. They couldn't even scratch the surface of the moon, folks. I must say, as far-fetched as it sounds, from all the data I've read, and many other people probably agree with me, the moon must be artificial. Many sound tests were formed on the moon by our astronauts. And after the sound test has stopped, the moon kept vibrating for a few minutes like a hollow bell.
Yes, I heard that.
Another fellow came with the same theory quite a few years ago. I'll mention his name in a very good way. The guy's great. His name is Richard C. Hoagland. I read a lot of his work. He's right on. From what I've read, from what I investigated, folks, the moon is artificial. The question is, why? The moon serves two purposes. Number one, there is water on the moon, plenty of water. It's used as a balancer to balance the moon's rotation. Stability.
Hmm.
Number two, the moon is artificial for one more important reason. It contains a very powerful power plant. That the Anunnaki, the big gods, have put there to form an invisible barrier, which I call in my book the Gamma G barrier. G stands for genes. That barrier is invisible. That barrier is exactly 250 million miles from Earth. That's where the moon is. 250 million miles away from the Earth. It's like an invisible glass shield all around the Earth. You can't see it. You cannot feel it. However, the way it works, it is as follows. That barrier is designed to hone in on a specific, I repeat, on a specific DNA code of the original, 200 Nephilim that were banished to the Earth and imprisoned here. Any other race, any other Anunnaki can come and go. However, if any one of those Nephilim, all their descendants with specific DNA code, will try to break through the barrier, they'll be instantly incinerated or whatever, whichever way. Now we come back to Roswell. Those UFOs is crashed in Roswell. Does Kenneth Arnold so? What they did, when Kenneth Arnold saw them flying in formation over Mount Rainier, Washington, they were on the way to the moon on a very critical mission. They tried to test the barrier in a few ways. Number one, they probably have test tubes inside the UFOs to contain a certain DNA, but also the grays. The grays are manufactured by the Anunnakis to be the workers, the little slaves throughout the universe. And those grays contained the exact DNA of the 200th Nephilim.
Oh, wow.
So when those UFO were on the way to the moon to try to break the barrier, the mission, I don't have to say, ended up in disaster. They could not pull the barrier. They came down crashing to Earth. The reason why they came crashing down near Roswell is it's a nuclear base. Those aliens thought maybe they can refuel their spaceships and keep going. Never happened. Let me say one thing. Those Nephilim have two ways of extracting fuel from a nuclear bomb. The one way we have done so far is when a nuclear bomb explodes in the atmosphere, on the ground, or anywhere, they have a way to extract energy from the explosion and convert it directly to their own fuel. The other way they have, I don't know if you remember, if you're a little boy, if you grew up on a farm or a small city, maybe even you, Preston, did you ever have a raw egg?
Have I ever eaten one?
Well, you ever drink a raw egg?
Sure.
Okay. The old trick of little boys to make one pinhole on one side of the egg with a spike or a fork.
Oh, right.
Make a hole on the other side.
Yeah, I've done that.
Suck out the inside. So, many times when we hear that UFOs are chasing our jets in the sky, and of course, recently, 2-3 years ago, do you remember the incident of the B-52? The flew across the country with six nuclear cruise missiles. And nothing happened.
Right.
The B-52 came back with all the cruise missiles intact. Well, did anybody ever check the inside of the cruise missile? See if anything is missing in the nuclear area? We never heard, did we?
No.
Right. They have a way of extracting from our underground silos, from our Air Force bases, from flying aircraft, they're nuclear equipped. They have a way of extracting fuel peacefully and from nuclear explosions.
So this is perhaps why they're constantly hovering. Nuclear bases all the time. I mean, there's certainly a lot of sightings over nuclear installations.
That's correct. Now, the reason why we didn't see many UFOs before Operation High Jump, they were hiding under the ice of Antarctica. You see, they promised the Nazi Germans who signed the treaty in 1936 in Black Forest. They promised them the world, victory over the Allies, you know, we'll build you weapons. However, they made one more promise to Hitler. If you'll ever lose the war, they promised them safe haven. They'll protect them at all costs. Now, they used the word protect. In other words, it's a defense capability. Not to attack for him, not offense.
Right.
And it's exactly what happened with Operation High Jump from all the witnesses. Those UFOs came out of nowhere. Some UFOs were piloted by the aliens. They never fired a shot. Some UFOs were piloted by Nazi Germans and aliens. They are the ones that fired our ships. Now, the way you can tell is this. The alien UFOs are called Fluglerads, whatever they are. They're very smooth ships. Very smooth.
Okay.
They come out of nowhere, from deep space, from the horizon, from underwater, and they go back underwater. At super speeds. The ones that fired our fleets, they were piloted by the Nazis, with the supervision of the aliens, the small parrot guns out of the bellies, like little dual cannons, to look like a very small anti-aircraft cannons. During World War II, they were seen above some German tanks called the KSK, twin barrel cannons, an energy beam cannon. That's what it is. That's how you can tell the difference between the alien UFOs and the Nazi-operated UFOs still guided by the aliens. They almost destroyed our fleet. Two or three of our aircraft carriers, including the Casablanca, and many destroyers, when they came back to our shores, they were told to return to the ports at night, so nobody would be able to see the damage they sustained. But here's the phenomenon. When we attacked the German bases in Antarctica, they attacked us furiously. When we stopped attacking them, they stopped attacking us. That happened 3 or 4 times. After the last attack, we gave up. We turned tail and we went home. They never pursued us. They could have had. They could have pursued us. They did not. That's exactly what Nephilim, the aliens, promised Hitler. They'll protect him at all costs, but they will not attack for him. And that's true until this day. They are still down there in Antarctica. They're still down there with the Nephilim. And the leader of the Nephilim is still Lucifer. Lucifer. However, if any one of you folks read the diary of Admiral Byrd, the secret diary,
right,
he went to the inner earth and he met a character called the Master. Well, that Master, folks, is Lucifer, the leader of the aliens. Now, the $64 question is, everybody's saying, well, the secret diary of Admiral Byrd took place at the North Pole.
No.
How can it be in a South Pole? Well, folks, that's very easy. The U.S. government is very, very clever. But not that clever. If you remember the movie Contact, character of Ellie was played by Judy Foster. She tried for weeks and weeks and weeks to decipher the sketches that she got from very far away alien planets. The engineering picture, she could not. One day she gets a email from Mr. Hayden and he calls her over and she was very happy. You found the primer. Found the code, how to put those sketches together. Well, folks, let me tell you something. Admiral Byrd's diary contains a primer. It's very easy. It's very easy. But that's what the U.S. government did. The U.S. government fudged the diary, but very easily. They changed four words. Four words. The U.S. government changed from south to north, and from Antarctic to Arctic. If you change those words, if you follow the logbook, the log hours, and the dates of the diary, they fit exactly to the minute, to the day, to the second.
Oh,
what Admiral Byrd did in Antarctica. Exactly.
That's just the type of thing the U.S. government would do, the disinformation. Keep just putting enough wrong information to confuse people.
Isn't that a shame? But the reason why it's done is, remember what I told you in the beginning. The Operation High Jump is being kept a secret worse than the atomic bomb. The reason is, once you admit the U.S. Navy and its personnel have encountered UFO, never mind encountered, saw UFOs in Antarctica, now they have to admit to the very distinct possibility that Kenneth Arnold saw those 9 UFOs in Washington. And you also have to admit to the very distinct possibility that, yes, at least 1 UFO did crash in Roswell. It's possible that they exist.
Right.
It's a catch-22 game, chain reaction. That's the reason why the U.S. government will never admit to Operation High Jump. What happened down there? And over 4,000 people have been sworn to secrecy. By the way, many have died, person. Many committed suicide, including some famous admirals that we know of. Come on, mention by name right now.
Right.
Now, one admiral, which I do not have his name, I can never find his name, was in the hospital bed about a month after Operation High Jump took place. Not Admiral Byrd, somebody else. And he was reading a report called Fire from the Sky Report. The Fire from the Sky Report, those days, back in 1947, was a very secret report that contained events, very, very secret events, especially from U.S. military actions worldwide. Admiral Byrd came to visit it, that admiral, and the admiral told Admiral Byrd, my God, I just read his report, what happened in the Operation High Jump. I never knew it was that bad. I never knew it was that bad. Now remember the name, Fire from the Sky Report. There's a reason why I'm mentioning that. You remember a very famous couple that were tried in the early 50s for giving the Russians nuclear secrets. And Julius Rosenberg.
Right, the Rosenbergs.
That's correct. They were on trial for giving nuclear secrets to the Russians. But that's not a joke, but that's not a subject. Now, during that trial, about halfway through the trial, the Rosenberg mentioned something very interesting. They mentioned warships from outer space. It's a record. They mentioned the word warships from outer space.
Really? Wow.
As soon as they mentioned that, the prosecution called for a recess, for a 24-hour recess. Then the trial resumed, and it was stopped short. They were given death sentence. The reason why, they could not afford the Rosenberg to keep on talking. You know why? Their job is...
Secret.
You remember the movie, 3 Days of the Condor?
Yeah.
Okay. Their job, it seems like, their specialty was reading material of U.S. military secrets. They read the report, the same report that Admiral read, Fire from Sky report. They found out what happened during Operation High Jump. And as soon as the U.S. government found out that they know, they had to keep them quiet. Now, yes, maybe they stole military secrets for the Russians. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. They probably did some. But the minute the government heard that they know what happened in June Operation High Jump, those people could not be allowed to go free.
Wow.
Now, that's a fact. They actually spoke of warships from outer space. They even referred to the year, I believe, 1947. They read that report, Fire from the Sky report. Now, back in Nephilim, that Operation High Jump, I give it a name, that we stirred up the cuckoo's nest. We made him come out of hiding. Now, the aliens, remember, they could not operate their spaceships without fuel. They didn't have much fuel left. But if you remember, Operation High Jump happened in 1947. But much earlier, before that, we exploded 2 atomic bombs over Japan. And we also exploded an atomic bomb in the Trinity test site.
All right.
It was August 6th and August 9th. I believe it was 1945, if I'm not mistaken. Now, they used those explosions to gather fuel for their spaceship, for their UFOs. They were fully fueled by then. That's why they were able to engage us in Operation High Jump. They had plenty of fuel. Now, between 1950 and 1990, you remember what kind of disaster we did to ourselves in the White Sand test site in Nevada? We exploded almost 1,000 nuclear warheads above ground, below ground. People think it was to fight aliens, you know, blow up, whatever. That's baloney. The only reason why we did that under the pretense of test sites is to explode as many nuclear warheads as we can with the orders of the Nephilim. They control our military, they control our generals. Somebody gets an order from above and says, do it. Nobody knows who gives the order. That's true for police department or military or whatever. We exploded almost 1,000 nuclear warheads in the area of Nevada test sites. Those aliens by now have all the fuel they can ever use to do whatever they wish, except for one thing. They still cannot penetrate that invisible barrier that exists, its origin is on the moon.
How does this all connect to 2012?
Okay. Those Nephilim know what's going to happen in 2012. They know. They know for a few reasons. Number one, they know that their own planet, Nibiru, is coming around the corner. They know that. It's their planet. And they know when it's coming. This day, December 21st, 2012, sounds by now funny because you heard it so many times.
Right.
And so many people poo-poo it. Well, that's done on purpose. Nobody wants you to know what's going to happen on that day. It can be good. It can be bad. I don't think it's going to be good. Maybe it's not going to be very, very, very bad, but it's not going to be good. And if it's not going to be good, it's going to be somewhat bad. They know that their own planet is coming around that day. Besides a few other things, which is, our galaxy rotates counterclockwise. And the sun is in the center of our galaxy. And we planets go on, in a circle around the sun. The last 2 or 3 years, from many publications I've read, scientific and otherwise, many experts agree in secret, nobody's going to say it loud, that the sun lost, as of today, approximately 300% of its magnetism.
Huh.
Now, that is very bad in two ways. Number one being the sun being the center of our galaxy, which, the next star out is Mercury, then Venus, and the Earth, and Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and so forth. They all in a circle around the sun. This sun is the center of equilibrium, gravity, a pull, to keep the whole thing intact. If it's correct, if the sun lost, by today, approximately 300% of its gravity, only if it's correct. Doesn't let Philip know, but I'm not sure. I'm just reading data. A certain alignment is supposed to occur approximately on December 21st, 2012. All those planets that I mentioned supposedly should align in line, forming like a straight edge.
Huh.
What's going to happen when this happens is all those planets, instead of individually forming a little magnet, they'll all form a large magnet, pulling to one side, outwards of the sun. And if the sun lost its pulling in power by 300%, what may happen to the planets outside?
Right.
They may tend to pull out more suddenly. They don't have to move far. The one jolt can destroy us. We are little people, you know?
Right.
But our planet is not going to be the only one in trouble. All the other planets may be in trouble too. That's number one. Number two, if it's true the sun lost 300% of its gravity, remember, we get heat from the sun by humongous gamma rays, huge flames that are coming out of the sun. They dissipate in space, and all we get is the heat. Now, what's going to happen if those flames now are not being pulled back toward the sun as they're supposed to, because release heat? Or those flames suddenly go out further because nothing is pulling them back toward the sun? We're going to be scorched.
Hmm.
It doesn't take many gamma rays. One little wincy gamma ray can do it. A planet can burn to a crisp. That's two things. The other thing is, many investigators found out residues in mountains across the world, black residue of some sort of carbon or metallic particles. They call it residue of black matter or black axiom. It seems that this happens every 25 to 27,000 years approximately. That our planet, when it reaches a certain point in the galaxy, its path of the Milky Way, will go through what's called black matter. Not that it's bad, but what's going to happen, if you ever seen a sand blasting machine, like a worker sandblasting a wall to remove the paint of a wall with a sandblaster?
Right.
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen when the Earth will enter the black matter or black axiom. It's like the Earth will be sandblasted by a certain material. And anything on the surface of the Earth, at that instant, will be gone.
Wow.
Just like, poof, just like that.
Wow. Well, you know what, Aaron? We're running out of time, and I'm going to have to cut you short, but you certainly have a lot of very interesting information. I'm going to have you back on the show, obviously, because we didn't really get to finish a lot of what you're talking about. But I do want to give you a chance to let people know where they can get your book and about your website. So if you could give that information out.
Sure, to get my book on the www.deepanalysiswritingconclusion.com. It's one word, folks. Deepanalysiswritingconclusion.com, or I can pick up on the Amazon, and a deep site does have more information. And like I said, anytime, Preston, if you want me back, I'll be glad to come back, because you're correct. There's a lot more to talk about, on the DNA subject. Lots more.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I really enjoyed what you had to say, and I want to thank you again for coming on to the show. It's very informative, and I'd definitely like to have you back on again.
And you're welcome very much, Preston, and thank you.
All right. Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. Sorry to cut our guest off like that, but we have run out of time. An hour goes by pretty quickly when we're talking about UFOs, because there is just so much information that needs to get out there. So I want to thank you all again for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads, and our guest tonight has been Aaron Kaplan. That's A-A-R-O-N, Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N. Check out his website, and you can get his book, Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion. That's actually the name of the book and the website, too. So just type in Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion on Google, and it'll take you right to his website, which has an excerpt of the book and a picture of it. It's got a beautiful cover. Check it out. I think you'll find the information very interesting. Well, that's it, guys. I want to thank you all again for listening, and hope you can join us next week when we bring on another exciting guest on UFOs and the Paranormal. Till then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.